Hello, everyone, and welcome back again to the Revenue Podcast. It's our first podcast of 2024. I'm your host, Kara French. We are going to be discussing today the complete customer journey and monetization, tackling all the things you need to know, the things you want to avoid, and how to better make that process efficient. And we're here today to discuss discovery to implementation and beyond, just really everything about the customer journey with Alon Benjamin. Now, those of you who are dedicated Revenue Podcast listeners will know that he has joined us before. So welcome back, Alon. You are our first ever repeat guest on the podcast.
Thank you, Kara. Happy to be here under a different hat this time.
That's right. So Alon has now joined us at Billing Platform as a director of revenue practice. And we are just so thrilled to have you on board.
Thank you very much. Thank
you. So I know since you've gotten started here, you've been a bit busy. Doing so much, and there's really just a lot of exciting things going on at Billing Platform right now. It's just a great time to be part of the company.
Yes, there's a lot going on. I'm not surprised. I mean, Billing Platform is growing, and we're catching up. We're keeping up.
Well, for those of our listeners who didn't get a chance to get to know you in our first series of your first episode of the Revenue Podcast, just as a reminder, you can always go back and listen to all of our previous episodes on billingplatform.com/podcast. But Alon, can you give us just a little bit of your background and information about who you are and what kind of work you're doing here at Billing Platform?
Absolutely. My past experience can be summarized as a process improvement type of operations. I've done basically the same type of operations in EY, roughly 6 years, go cardless just before I joined the Billing Platform for roughly 4 years, and a handful of other smaller places that I've worked through throughout the years. And fundamentally, what I do is redesign and improve processes, and that include controls, systems, implementation, policies, procedures, whatever it takes. So customer journey and in general, an implementation of a system is something that I've been exposed to quite a while.
Yeah, so we're talking about the customer journey today. I think when we say customer journey, it can mean a lot of different things, but one of the key things I keep going back to is just how overwhelming it can be kind of when you're getting started. And I think one of the things we're going to do today is break down each of the phases of that customer journey so that it doesn't have to be that way. I really enjoyed going over sort of the pre-interview research here that we had and just sort of the methodology in which you've approached it to make the process go really just seamlessly. So if people are thinking about getting started in this journey, you know, like, okay, I've got to tackle my billing, we've got to tackle RevRec, we've got to tackle whatever it is that they're looking for. Where do you even begin in this sort of search for a monetization solution?
Yes. So customer journey might mean different things to different people. Here, I would like to basically, let's say, scope the discussion up until ongoing support and maintenance eventually, but starting with, as we've just alluded to, the discovery phase. So the first step is basically identifying the need. Now, it sounds a bit more formal than it really is. When you think about the need, why are you even starting to do something? Why are you even starting to decide, okay, I need to implement a new billing system? Something is not working as it should. There's a bit of a pain there. Maybe it's outdated systems. Maybe business needs are kind of expanding. Maybe it's just not efficient enough and you want to make it more efficient, right? That is where you usually start. You probably already have a very good baseline understanding of why you're starting something, because requirements like this don't show up out of nowhere. It murmurs in the business for a while before it becomes official, but you shouldn't really skip that stage. So I would say the first stage is identify the need.
Okay. And then, so from there, you're like, okay, we've identified this need. We know we can't go on this way. We've got to fix this. We've got to address it. Where do you begin the process of even researching where to go, researching those next steps for your best options?
Right. So once you've identified the need in specific, right, and if you've done it correctly, you'll probably, that's the first step of getting buy-in from the business, because people will view this as a potential improvement for their pain point. rather than a pain point by itself of a project that is being forced upon them. You start by doing initial research, right? So you start by understanding what are the requirements, what are your budget constraints, what are the options in the market, and so on. I would suggest at this stage to filter out solutions, potential solutions, heavily. It's going to be a long process, and you want to conserve your energy and time and attention of people. You don't want to have them, you know, review 20 potential options.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. That would be so, too much.
Right. Exactly. So really filter out if you have a limited budget, filter out the expensive solutions, even if they seem nice, right? If you have a complex requirement, filter out the more basic solutions. It's just, you're kind of setting yourself up for failure if you don't.
Yeah, it seems to be like to know, just to be practical about what, you know, what you're going to be able to invest in or what your needs are moving forward.
Exactly. And it will also free you up mentally to really deep dive into the handful of solutions that you really want to deep dive into. One other small item or tip I would put here is you might think at the discovery phase or initial research phase that the project hasn't really started yet because you're just researching, you haven't committed to anything, you haven't selected anything. As far as management is concerned, usually by this stage, the project has started. Mm-hmm. The moment the ask was placed on the table, the project has started. So also save yourself some time instead of, you know, showing up half a year later, still stuck in their initial research phase.
Yeah, you're definitely, it's part of the process, right? And it's a key part of the process that can't be overlooked. You don't want to feel rushed, like you were saying, through that process, because it's mentally, you need to give yourself adequate time. So when you're going through all this, obviously gathering requirements is such a critical step. To sort of get you to where you want to go. And that's just going to require a lot of cross collaboration and consideration. One of the things I hear is like getting key stakeholders involved. Where do you begin when you're sort of saying, okay, we've kind of narrowed things down. Now it's really the time for us to sit and really think about what we're going to need in this product.
Exactly. So that's what I would call kind of the outline of specific requirements. If the previous stage was a bit more general, allows you to kind of do a quick filtering, this one really needs to go in depth. And that is the point where you engage everyone you can engage. What is the feature you're looking for? What type of scalability should the new solution support, right? Integration capabilities, billing system does not sit alone. It is really highly integrated into the business. Even things like user interface, right? Mm-hmm. There are some good white papers out there. If you go, you know, Google, go into different solutions, website and so on, there are some good white papers out there that can really give you a head start in kind of really detailed lists. I would highly recommend using them. Again, it's a shortcut to speed up the process. You need to keep that in mind as well. And also that is the time in which you start involving all other departments that you think are viable to be involved. Finance, IT, customer support, if you have a data team, obviously involve the data team and so on.
Is there something that, you know, we're talking about cross collaboration. Is there something when we're talking about getting people in the same room to sort of discuss, everybody is going to touch the monetization process. Is there a common mistake or somebody that is often overlooked in that collaboration process?
I think that one of the things people tend to miss out on is they don't even consider changes or development that they can do internally that has nothing to do with the external solution that might make their life significantly easier. Now, if you are a really big, you know, you have a big company and a lot of people, and you understand software development and you have very high kind of detailed requirement, you might consider internal development of some sort of tool to handle portions of the process. You're probably not going to develop something that will handle everything. That's way too much. But even if you're not that type of company, even if you're smaller and more agile, there are probably changes, specific changes you can make that would make a distinct difference on the project and the process as a whole. For example, implementing a small kind of midware that is in charge of data, you know, delivery between your different systems, right? Changing a process in a specific area that would significantly simplify it, such that you don't have to, you can reduce some heavy lifting from whatever future solution you choose. Do not neglect internal developments and internal changes you can make that would have beneficial impact on whatever project you're about to start.
Yeah, it sounds like since you're doing an evaluation of sort of these external processes, it sounds like it's a great time to do evaluations of everything that's related to your business, including your internal processes that are currently existing.
Exactly. And the upside is that if you do find those internal changes, you're not really beholden to anyone. You're not dependent on any external, usually you're not dependent on any external party. So you can just get them started in parallel to whatever it is that you're going to do.
So you're saying this is done in tandem, in parallel with everything else that you're doing.
Well, I mean, you have to be careful about how much you can do in parallel with the team that you have and mm-hmm. you know, the time that you can invest. But if it can be done and you identify something that is, you know, you want to do almost in any other scenario, because sometimes you have scenarios. If you're going to do this, then you're going to do that and so on. And in that case, you need to pick the scenario before you start working. But sometimes there are improvements that are beneficial to be done in almost any future scenario. So you might as well tackle them.
Right. When you get down to it and you've said, okay, we've gone through all the requirements, we've cleaned up our internal processes, we are ready to move ahead and kind of make the final selection of a vendor that we're going to partner with to come in and work with us. Is there something that you can do when you're evaluating these potential vendors to sort of make sure that you are getting the right fit for your business needs, your business objectives, and really your sort of long-term goals moving forward?
Yeah, so I would say, think about what does it mean to evaluate a vendor or a kind of external solution, right? You want to understand what is the offering, technical and non-technical, right? Things like customer service, for example, they're included. Evaluate that. You want to understand what is the reputation of that external vendor. This is going to be a long process. It's not a quick buy and install. You want someone that will stick with you through the hard times. Pricing obviously plays a part. So widen your evaluation to more than just the technical capabilities and more than just the bottom line price. Kind of, you know, consolidate it. I would highly recommend creating a very detailed RFP document.
Absolutely.
I know it's a hassle at the first step, but a good RFP document, it doesn't only support you in the vendor selection process and allows you to do it more clearly and unbiased, but it really helps during the project itself because it tends to consolidate, it tends to force the company and the people involved to really crystallize requirements and put them on paper, which is you know, the basics of any future project. So once you've done that, go a step further. Request demos, conduct interviews, both with the vendor and, you know, potential customers. Compare proposals, obviously, right? Really go in depth into that process.
So a thorough or an in-depth RFP, what else can that make you consider in terms of your business? Because this is going to force you to take, I think, a pretty detailed, hard look at sort of all aspects of everything you've got going on.
Yeah, and you will have a lot of aspects, and you will have a lot of lines that you have to consider. And, you know, some of them would be preferable in one vendors and other would be preferable in other vendors. And it's kind of difficult to make that comparison. The go-to method is some sort of a scoring method. So you take all your requirements, technical or not, you give them a score, keep it clear and crystal because you have to consolidate scoring views from different people across the business. So say something like, you know, 1 to 5, 5 is we can't live without it. 1 is like, it's nice, but it's not a big deal. Score everything and then have some sort of an alternative options. You can, you know, think through alternative options that you would want to consider. And you can have, again, different setups or, you know, different scenarios that you can construct out of that scoring.
Okay. If someone's coming in and you've done the detailed RFP, I know you said it's a pain, but it really is going to set you up for success moving forward. And you've gone through the scoring process and you say, okay, we've selected a vendor now. We're ready to work on the contracts, do the red line, take care of everything. What are some of the key things you need to consider once you've narrowed your vendor down to sort of your final option there?
Right. So you're basically at the at this point, you're basically at the selection and contracting kind of phase, right? Mm-hmm. So you're dealing with contract terms, you're dealing with pricing, timeline, sometimes it's rough timeline, but still it's on the table, support service and so on. I would say, first of all, include any customizations that might be required. Hopefully you have a lot of requirements that can be delivered out of the box with whatever vendor you select, but usually you also have some requirements that require some customization, and those customizations are the one that usually take more time and take more money and so on. Do not forget them and include them in the contract. Include incentives, penalties for delivery, you know, on both sides. If someone it gets delayed, you want to make sure that the incentives of delivering high quality product in time is baked into the contract. It would save a bit of headache moving forward. Include mechanism to deal with mid product changes. It will happen, right? You will not create a full complete list at the beginning of the project. Forget about it.
it's not happening. Just
exactly.
Yeah.
Bake into the contract and into your SOWs the mechanisms by which you inject those changes, and how much would they be priced, and how would you approve them, and so on. Again, it will save you headache down the line. And do not forget, and I cannot stress this enough, do not forget to commit internal resources. It's easy to think that you just bring the external vendor and they will deal with everything. It doesn't work. You need people from within the business to perform work on the project. And usually, if you get to the point where you decide to implement, for example, a billing project, a billing system, by the way, everything I'm saying right now does not just apply to a billing system, but I will be specific on the billing system now. If you get to the point where you decide you want to implement a billing system, best guess is your business team, your billing team, your finance team, whoever it is that's doing business as usual work are already flooded. There's a kind of a desperate need for a system. And if they're already flooded with just keeping up day-to-day work, you cannot expect them to also dedicate 20%, 30% of their time to project work. So you need to think about it in advance. If you need to bring in like extra help or external people to pick up some of the more simple tasks to free up your time, do that, because they will be needed. Those internal resources will be needed throughout the project.
Yeah, that's one of the themes we hear over and over on the Revenue Podcast. I know Morgan Stanton's talked about it extensively, is having dedicated people to work on implementation and you know, committing internal resources to making the project go smoothly. Because if you think about, you're absolutely right. How can you be expected to do your current job and then also manage an implementation on top of that? It's going to slow down the process in its entirety.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we talked about implementation. I think that's a word that gives a lot of people some pause. What are the ways that we can be successful in an implementation plan? Because it doesn't have to be, it's got to be well thought out and well researched, but it doesn't have to be overwhelming if it's done in a detailed way.
Right. And kind of the devil's in the details in these kind of, steps. You need a detailed implementation plan. And by detailed, I mean, include milestones, break it down into milestones as much as you can, include timeline, obviously resource allocation, as I've already mentioned, internal and external, but go a step further, go to communication channels. How exactly do you operate? Don't forget that there's a saying that in times of stress, you don't rise to your goals, you fall to your habit and your systems. Make sure your habits and your systems are baked properly, because that's the level in which you're going to operate in the height of the project, right? In the most stressful parts of the project.
Right.
Some tips. I would say your vendor should be able to help you with creating a project plan. You might have most of the people out there who manage whatever it is, maybe the billing operations or finance operation, whatever. They might have 30, 40, 50 years of experience. But how many implementation of a new billing system have they done? And
Right.
specifically, whatever specific vendor you selected or another system, again, it's all very generalized. Your vendor should be able to show up and say, not only do I know my system best, obviously, I've also implemented this system again and again in a lot of, your vendor should have a lot more experience about the specific project than you. Utilize it, expect it from your vendor, right? And that include comments and proposition that your vendor might make regarding your own internal steps, right? Okay. Leverage that knowledge and experience.
Okay.
The second tip I would say, include internal tasks is part of your project plan. Do not just assume your project plan is what the vendor delivers. There's a lot of things that happen before, during, and after the core development phase, right? So some tasks are almost solely in your hand, and you need to recognize them, and they can impact the project greatly. For example, data cleanup.
Yeah.
You have an amazing system. If your data is messy, you're not going to have a good result. And right. Data is something, usually the vendor cannot help you clean up the data because you need some sort of one-on-one, you know, kind of one line by line work, right? Actions.
Right.
Include deliverables in your plan. You want to understand exactly what step, how does that step end? What is a deliverable for each step? And try to freeze business processes or changes during the project. It's difficult when you're engaging in a very long project because you can't just freeze the entire business. But what you can do is, first of all, try and be quick about some of the aspects and break it down into smaller segments. And whatever segment it is you're actively implementing at that point, be it a business unit or a different product or a customer segment, whatever that may be, try and freeze changes midway because sometimes you start off at one point, you map all the requirement, you start working, and before you reach the end, things have changed. And that means you just have to kind of change things on the go. It's not a good habit. It will force you to convince, and you're probably going to have to exert some pressure upwards to management, but it's worth it.
You're talking about management, made me think of project management, and this is project management is going to be a real key here in getting, you know, that implementation, you know, staying on track and making sure you're following the path, the milestones that you've, you know, set up for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you cannot do it without, you need tactical and strategical management for these type of projects. Billing is a complex process, specifically billing. Again, it touches on multiple departments, multiple systems. I would say, first of all, a proper project manager or a PMO or something is a must. Internally, externally, it doesn't matter, but you really need to take advantage. You put that position in place almost immediately. You can have one main kind of PM and then secondary PMs for example, you can have the PM of your data team, the PM of, fine, but make sure you at least have one main one that consolidates everything, in charge of communication and organization, coordination, and so on. Do not neglect that. Don't forget to designate SMEs. As I said, you can't expect your core team to do their business as usual and also as a side hustle do the project. It's not going to work.
be an SME on the side. Won't take much time. Yeah.
Dedicate an SME, someone who knows the material and also is fully engaged with the project. It doesn't have to be 100% of their time, but they need to be like significantly engaged. And also include any future internal system owner. Don't forget that once you have a system in place, you take ownership of it. Not every single change you want to go to the vendor and ask them to change, right? And the time to put whatever that may be, the analyst, the IT person, whoever that may be, that technical owner that can operate the system in a level higher than just the users of the system, you want to involve that resource quickly. Hopefully, right, in the early stages of the project.
So when we're going through this massive project and you know, how are you able to measure how well development is moving along during this process with these sort of milestones and things that, you know, you've outlined?
Yeah, I would say the key goal here is segmentation. Obviously, you're going to design some KPIs around it, and you're going to have some KPIs. But if what you're building is just one big step, it's like all or nothing, one big bang. It's so hard to understand where actually are you in the process, because you're working and working and working, and you're 70% on 10 tasks, but nothing is really done. Segment, 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 create milestones, create sub-milestones and sub-tasks. You want to see consistent delivery of items. Consider starting with limited scope. It really, really helps. You're always underestimating how much work you're going to have to invest. So limiting the scope to begin with would give you a bit of leeway moving forward. It needs to be robust enough, the scope that you're selecting. It needs to be robust enough to touch on some of the more complex requirements that you have. You don't want to start too simple, but don't necessarily go to your most complex use cases. Again, there's going to be a lot of other things that you won't even think about that will be a burden in the project. So don't select the most complex use case. Start somewhere in the middle. Move fast with development. Okay, testing, fixes, and so on. You want to aim to see things getting built, tested, and running. So plenty of iteration and unit testing. It's almost impossible to predict all the things you need to test for before you actually flip the switch on things. So you want to be quick and allow yourself to flip the switch on small movement forward, small improvements or small development in order to see the pipeline flows from end to end, which will by itself expose the small things you might have missed. And I would say, on the one hand, move fast on the development iteration and so on, but on the other hand, be careful with the wider team. Some end users, some people are just not happy when they see, what is the phrase, see how the sausage is being made.
Right, exactly.
There are segments in your business that should not be exposed to half-baked solutions,
Yeah.
right? They should not see things as they are being built with not fully complete and stable with all the issues of a project in progress, right? So have a core team that actually works on the project, sees things done, and is more inclined to, when they see a problem, they're inclined to fix it. And then once things are stable and clean and working properly, that's where you expose the wider business to it. It would also help you get buy-in from the other business. If you expose something half-baked and broken to the wider business early on in the project, you could derail your entire project. You're going to lose
Right.
confidence. Management are going to hear it's going to create noise and so on. Try and avoid that. It's something you, again, separate your two teams. There's a project team, and then there's like ex call it externals.
So when you're moving into just things like testing and QA, things like that, that's going to be a little bit further down the line. You're saying don't wait for that so that we're ready when, you don't want to expose people too soon to things that aren't really
So
ready for
I would say
testing.
separate testing into, there's two types of testing. There's testing, unit testing, and those are the fast ones, the quick ones, the iterative ones. Should be a lot of unit testing from your vendor. You want to have more unit testing from your project team, your internal project team, and so on. You build something, you test it, you tweak it, you build it again, you test it. Those should happen continuously, as just as part of the development process. But then there's kind of towards the tail end of the project, or at least the tail end of a big milestone, you probably have UATs.
Right.
And you should not treat, I know the word testing is included in UATs. You
You're
should
like,
not
but
treat, you should not treat UATs as a testing cycle. The focus on UATs is not the testing, is the acceptance. Okay, UATs are an event. UAT is where you bring in your wider team and they see things move. They see the built end kind of end process or end product. You walk the wider team through their use cases. They basically pretend to do their work, right, on that newly developed solution or
So
system.
this is getting their buy-in. This is getting their
Exactly.
acceptance of the solution as working smoothly.
Exactly. UAT is mostly designed to get acceptance. Now, you
Okay.
obviously, it is functionally, it's testing.
Sure, sure.
You have a lot of eyes on it, and they do things you might not think of, and you'll find some insights to fix, which is great. That by itself also gives buy-in when someone gives you a kind of a comment and you take it to heart and fix it. But again, you need to show up to the UAT so well prepared and confident. Like, do not treat this as another round of testing. It will backfire spectacularly.
So is this, we're giving them additional support during UAT, documentation, things like that?
Yeah, you show up with documentation, you show up with a plan, you show up with it. In hopefully, I would highly recommend bringing people on site, sitting that everyone needs to sit together. You know, the vendors need to be present on site.
Okay, that's a
Treat
good
this
point.
as a workshop, not just another round of testing.
So there's UAT and then there's going live. Okay, so those are two. I was always confused a little bit. What is the going live that what does that mean?
Right, so go live is the point where you say, okay, the system is capable of doing everything I want it to do. And now I need to actually use it in a live business scenario, right? I'm putting an actual customer on it. An invoice will be calculated and sent to that customer at the end of the month. Usage will be pushed to the system. The go live step is not just flipping the switch, right? You need to manage the go live. The go live is an involved step. You can have more than one go live, first of all, right?
Okay.
Segment it. Have go lives for one customer at first, and then 10 customers, and then maybe a whole business unit, and so on, right? I would highly recommend considering going live with a very small, as I said, handful of accounts or contract. Let the process and the system run end to end. It will flush up all the maybe small things you might have missed, you know, a report that is missing a column somewhere, some sort of filter that exists in an integration that no one thought of, and so on. Flush it small so you can quickly adjust and then only start ramping up volume. Have a very, very detailed plan. What does it actually mean to go live? It involves more unit than you think it is. It's not just the core unit. If you're pushing usage from somewhere, someone needs to flip the switch on that usage pipeline and start pushing that usage and monitor it and see that it goes well. Reporting, all of a sudden you have a new system that's generating data that needs to be reported downstream to management or to finance. You need to make sure that all the information flows properly, right? So have a detailed plan, have timeline and scope, and understand what systems are impacted and how the reporting work, and review and approval processes. You probably want to have a more robust review and approval process in the early days to make sure that nothing fails, right? Before you gain
Right.
confidence with the system. So be detailed with your plan, with your go live plan. It's not go live is not one day. Go live is a period of time. And then also, I would highly recommend document everything for your auditors,
Okay.
especially cutovers between systems, because they will ask and they will want to see all the detailed information to make sure that nothing broke in that transition. In
And
addition,
your vendor is there for all of this, or your vendor is doing all the support and assist during the go live process.
your vendor should definitely assist, should definitely support, should definitely know or at least give you recommendation regarding what you need to do, and what you need to focus on. As I said, go live is it's an integrated part of the project. Your vendor should be there. It's not the part, go live is not the point in which the vendor hands you the system and walks away. That is not the point. Actually,
Right.
your vendor should really be aware of your go live period so that they can ramp up attention on their side, because it's such a delicate step.
So how are you evaluating that kind of success? You're doing the go lives, you know, you've had the implementation. Is there sort of like a review period or an analysis period where you're just making sure that things are working as, you know, they should be?
Absolutely. So you could consider doing some sort of, for example, shadow billing period. If we're talking specifically about the billing systems, you can do some sort of shadow billing period in which you run the system, but you also do billing in parallel with something separate just to make sure that you're getting the same results. Sometimes it works, sometimes it's unnecessary. It's up to you. Run extra monitoring, review, approval activities, as I've already mentioned. If you see an issue, raise it quickly and resolve it quickly. Do not wait until it blows up. It's small. Take advantage of it, of the fact that it's still small, and fix things quickly. So
sure.
A lot of monitoring, right? And in addition, you probably, if this is a milestone out of a bigger project with more milestone, this is the point in which you stop and look back at the milestone and have a review and kind of understand, okay, what have I done right? What have I done wrong? How can we change things just to make sure your next milestone runs better?
Yeah. One of the things I think that some businesses miss is sort of the after implementation considerations. So, you know, always looking ahead, what should you be thinking about, you know, once you sort of tackle the hurdle of implementation with maintenance, support, customer service, just all those things ongoing?
Yeah, so absolutely. Once the project is done, you don't just walk away, right? First of all, you live the customer, you live with the system. And second of all, the vendor now moving forward has a live customer that they need to provide support, ongoing support, right? So first of all, understand what does that mean, the ongoing support, right? Set up the internal process by which you reach out to your vendor to resolve an issue, right? So you should have probably SLAs in your contract or your SOW, and but the team needs to understand how to reach out. Maybe you want to have an internal step before you reach out externally, right? Maybe you have some champions in the kind of your company that can resolve a lot of the things in a more robust manner before you even need to reach out. But you need to understand what is the process. In addition, communication, right? From now on, you and your vendors are kind of in this together. Your vendors is looking for feedback. Your vendor will continue to work on the system, right? They will deliver enhancement, they will deliver new features. So regular communication should happen. Obviously, it's not going to be as intensive as during the project, but you should know how, and you should feel comfortable reaching out to your vendor with requests, feedback, and so on, such that the vendors would know what their customer base is looking for and adjust their kind of operation.
No surprises.
Also, I would consider a full system review once every, I don't know, 2 years, maybe.
Okay.
Just to make sure, you know, maybe there are different features that were added that you're not aware of. Maybe there was some sort of customization that happened in your project that is not really necessary now that the system has evolved 3 years down the line. And you want to reduce customization as much as you can usually. So consider some sort of a more in-depth full system review with your vendor once every couple of years.
I think the whole customer journey, just sort of from start to finish, from discovery to maintenance, you know, it can be a long process. I think one of the key things that I've taken away from today and just listening to you talk is just about the importance of really setting those milestones during every phase of the process to break it down into chunks, to make it seem like, okay, we are progressing, even though maybe, you know, this is taking a little bit longer than we thought, or things like that.
Yeah. I would also, it's a big, heavy project. It can be a very big, heavy project, depending on the complexity and volume of your business. You would need to manage expectation and get buy-in. It should be an active task as part of the project.
Right.
Manage expectation and get buy-in from the wider team. Because if there's one thing that's guaranteed, is that it's going to take time, it's going to take attention from people, it's going to cost money. And those are all basically the negative sides of it, right? But you need to understand, you need to expose all the positive sides. You need to expose the new functionality that you have. You need to expose the decreasing manual labor that you've managed to produce because you've implemented something new, right? You need to expose the business, kind of new business ability that you've unlocked, or new segment or new pricing structure that you've unlocked now that you have the system that you couldn't do beforehand with your old setup. Make sure to expose those internally to continue having people still be on board and positive regarding that project. People work better when they see the positive value side of it, not just
Absolutely.
The negative effort.
Yeah, when they see the the ease with which, you know, we're all working toward this common goal. And these are the things, once we reach that goal, these are the things that we have to look forward to, right? As exactly. as a, you know, even on the day to day, it could be something as
exactly.
simple as, you
exactly. know, and if they've worked for, I don't know, 2 months, and then they get something nice at the end of it, they would be significantly more inclined to work 2 months more for the next thing.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Alon, I appreciate you walking us through this entire customer journey. It's been so great visiting with you today. I really want to thank you for being on the podcast with us.
Thank you very much, Karen.
Thanks. All right. As always, we want to connect with you. Visit our billing platform social media pages or our business website at www.billingplatform.com. Make sure you check out our podcast series that we've done in 2023. You don't want to miss an episode. We'll be back next month with new topics, new insights, and of course, new perspectives on all things revenue. Thank you for listening and for having your cup of coffee, tea, or whatever makes you happy with us. Cheers.